Continuing in Mitzvah Tav Chaf Aleph 421, Mitzvah's Tefillin Shel Yad, the Mitzvah to put Tefillin on one's arm. Mishor Sheha Mitzvah, what's the reasoning behind the Mitzvah? Lefi Sheha Adam, Biyosu Baal Chomer, if a person is necessarily physical, Yimoshech Bechreach Achara Taivis. So that's part of human nature, that we respond to our internal desires. V'kichein Teva Chomer Levakesh Kol Hanos, Elov, the Ariv Kasus Keperet Ein Havin. So you are drawn to pleasurable, enjoyable things, and you want to enjoy life as much as possible. However, sometimes being drawn excessively towards a pleasure can lead one to sin. So therefore, we have to have our souls act as a check against excessive pursuits of physicality. So the soul lives in a place that is foreign to it. The soul lives, is supposed to be on the level of the heavens, but it comes down here to Olam Hazeh, to this world, and it feels a little bit out of place. So the power of the physical is likely to overcome the power of the spiritual, because this world is inherently physical, and the spiritual is at a disconnect from its source, which is the heavens. You need a lot of guardians to protect it from its bad neighbor. So it's like a really holy person lives in a neighborhood of people who are sinners. And after a while, instead of in, a really holy person from Kiryat Sefer is going to live to try to do Kiruv or something in the middle of downtown Tel Aviv. There might be some nice people in downtown Tel Aviv also, but you get the general idea. So it's one person cut off from its source. The natural environment for a person to grow in spirituality is in Kiryat Sefer and not in Tel Aviv. So if you're in Tel Aviv, so you need a lot of protections and reminders from whence you came. Since the soul is in the purview of the body, so the body might kill it. The body might take over. So if you don't, if you're not careful, you're going to totally do only things that are physical. So God wanted to ensure that we have the merit of overcoming this. The tefillin are our guardians against sin. Since we have physical things tied onto us that remind us of the spiritual at all times, as we'll learn, it says nowhere in the Torah that the wearing of tefillin is limited to morning prayers. That really, tefillin are supposed to be worn all day long. The mitzvah is to wear tefillin all day long. It's just that nowadays we limit it to the morning prayers because tefillin have gotten much bigger than they used to be in the times of Chazal. So people used to be able to go about their farming activities and business and the tefillin, they barely notice the tefillin. Yeah.
Why is it that they have gotten so much bigger?
Excellent question. One reason is that the Shimush Rabbah, which is a Geonic text about how to make tefillin, writes that the dfus, the mold that you build the tefillin around, at least for the head tefillin, it gives its measurement as 2 etzbos. Mm-hmm. 2 etzbos meaning this wide, which is about the size of contemporary tefillin. Chabad, by the way, uses a bigger shear for the 2 etzbos. They want the batim themselves to be 2 etzbos wide, and they're using the chazan shear for the etzbos, which is why the Chabad tefillin are so enormous. The tefillin that they were talking about were thinner, and it was this big for the whole thing, as opposed to as the pashtus, as opposed to nowadays that we have the batim, and then you have a little bit of a wider piece at the bottom called the titura. But even that, that's not mentioned in the Gemara.
What about the size of the writing on the cloth? Is it people can't?
That's another.
They don't do micro.
That's another reason that the script has gotten so complicated that it's become very difficult to write small. So therefore, the Sofrim want to be able to write the Parshias in a larger size. So therefore, the Batim have to be larger to accommodate.
The script isn't the same. I mean,
is the script nowadays the exact same as it was in the times of the Tanoim? No. If you look at the Dead Sea Scrolls, which are, again, not necessarily an example of the exact type of ksav that was used in Tefillin and Mezuzahs, might have been more careful. They didn't necessarily hear all the rabbinic halachas that are in the Dead Sea Scrolls, but the general font, more or less, was the same. It's a much simpler type of ksav.
Is it the Tagim or
The Tagim is a big shaila though, what that really means. So according to many Rishonim, the Tagim are not three sticks on each of the letters Shin, Ayin, Gimel, Nun, Zayin, Tzadi. As the acronym Shatnez Gates is the acronym for letters that get Tagim. So some Rishonim hold that has nothing to do with Shatnez Gates, and the Tagim are just little crowns that are added on certain letters for emphasis. Mm-hmm. That's the way the Rambam holds, the Shemush Rav also holds that. And others hold that the Tagim are not three sticks that stick out of the letter, but rather a feature of the letter shot in his gates. Now, if you look at old script, even up until the year 1000, some places later, it's that the head of those letters had three corners. That's what it means, that it needs three tagim. Meaning, I don't know how to, I need a, can I borrow, do you mind? Paper?
Oh, yeah.
So if you look, for example, at a contemporary gimel, so it looks like this. You have a square head, and you have a thing coming down there. But if you look at the old tzav, the head actually looks like this. So here you have three points in the head, and according to a lot of Rishonim, those are the tagim. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but that's the tagim is a whole. Somewhat, I wrote to an Israeli frum academic about this topic, about the history of tagim, many years ago, because I was doing some work on it, and he promised me. He said you have some good points, but he promised me that he would be for a book of his was forthcoming where he would answer all my questions, and so far hasn't come out. Okay, well, that's the story we're talking about. I mean, the script obviously looks somewhat similar, but it's the way we have very thin, careful lines, and the letters are almost drawn instead of written. Is just scripts develop again? It has to look more or less the same. Again, I think that someone from the times of Chazal would be able to read our script, that we could read their script, but there have been some changes. Yeah,
slightly meta, but not really. If you're going to wear them all day, wouldn't wearing tzitzit serve pretty much the same purpose? And not be, especially as they got bigger.
Well, tzitzis you have to see. Again, the question I think we discussed when we were talking about tzitzis is there's a disagreement as to how much you actually have to see them. That's why some people wear the tzitzis out and some people wear the tzitzis inside.
In America, up until recently, one could wear them out. My husband never wore his out. He grew up in Europe.
Okay, yeah. Right. But the tefillin, there's a difference that tefillin you can feel while you're wearing them. Mm-hmm. You feel the...
Yeah. So next question. Yeah. I know it's very tiresome, but if this is all so important and stuff, and keep
I see where this is going.
Don't tell me time bound and stuff. And it's time. If you do something all day but not at night, okay, that's time bound. So women are exempt from tzitzis.
But it's same as tefillin.
But I mean, so does this leap to conclusion? Possibly false. Quite possibly false. That women don't need this, or what? I mean, what are women supposed to do to think about God all day? Like, men are supposed to wear tefillin to think about God all day. What are women supposed to do to think about God all day? This is not...
I mean, if you want the apologetic answer, so women are innately more spiritual, and they don't need all these external physical things.
I don't know. Some women, yes. Some women, no. Uh-huh. Believe me.
Okay.
Well, all right. No, actually, you could say that men are more strongly drawn, to... base,
certainly, yeah.
Because after all, like I say, I admit that I am genetically predisposed towards violent crime. I have a Y chromosome. And men the crime rate for men is like 9 times that for women, especially violent crimes.
I get it.
So you could say there is, you know, actually, I was going to say that it turns out that even at times of the other side of the Gideon Bible, the Sefer Matisyahu, it complains that the Pharisees wear their tefillin broad on their foreheads.
It does say that?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Broad meaning big.
That's probably
broad. Yeah, I mean, I assume broad means whatever, right? Or the Greek for it.
Right, out there.
You know, I mean, but the, you know, like big tefillin, like you know, like in your, you know, right.
Well, there is the thing actually that
so complaints go back. You know, to that.
It does mention that in the times of the Gaon, which is obviously much later than that. But that the Rosh Yeshiva got to wear bigger tefillin than the students.
Oh, okay. Like Trump's salt shaker, right?
So, bigger tefillin is sometimes...
Bigger is not necessarily.
Right, have sometimes been associated with a higher status. But that's the basic idea, because the script got bigger, and also the batim started being made of thicker skin.
Oh, yeah.
Again, you have tefillin that are from Europe that are made with a thin skin, and nowadays batim are made of the skin from the neck of an ox, which is like the thickest animal skin imaginable. Mm-hmm. So in the olden days, they used to be made from sheepskin. So in Europe, you have tefillin that are made from sheepskin that are enormous, so it's not necessarily tied to that, but it is, but if you have the thicker skin, so it is difficult to make it very, very small.
How thick is actually for gassos? How is thick is the finished, you know, skin, as it were?
It depends on the part, because the part where the parchias actually rest inside, it's pressed to be much thinner.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
But on the titura and the mabarta, the base part, yeah. So then, I don't mm-hmm. know, it's like this.
Oh, so it could be like 4 millimeters?
Or something like that, yeah.
Okay, good, yeah. Uh-huh. That's quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So, but now it's more difficult to wear it all the time. Also, there's the concern that as the generations got lower, so then there was a concern that people might not treat tefillin with the proper respect. They might, even though technically the halacha is that they don't have to be dealing with religious things all the time. They're tefillin. You're allowed to go about your normal business. But there are rules that, again, ideally, that one should not have lustful thoughts while wearing tefillin. So if you limit the window of wearing tefillin, so then it's less likely that you'll disrespect their holiness. Yeah.
I seem to remember hearing that men were allowed actually to urinate with their wearing tefillin.
That's
assuming
true.
That they're, you know, they would have their robes, you know, hiding everything, you know. But that's
that's true. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow, that's
kind of
mind blowing today. Mm-hmm. I mean.
Right.
Yeah.
So
not defecation though. Yeah.
Correct. That's. It also depends what type of facilities you're using. That there's a difference between a beis hakisei kavua and a beis hakisei arai, a real bathroom and a temporary bathroom. So there were places that were designated just for urination, and you would be allowed to go in there with your tefillin, and you'd be allowed to urinate with tefillin on. Yes.
So tzoa is a much greater level of
right. So. There are places that still have this. I remember when I was learning in Lakewood for a summer. So the bathroom was structured in, I guess, a way to facilitate people wearing tefillin into the bathroom. The urinals, first of all, the washing stations were outside completely of the bathroom.
Yeah.
And then there was the room inside that was only urinals.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a totally separate room beyond that where we had toilets.
Oh, interesting.
So... Yeah, in theory, in such a place, you could go in with your tefillin.
Did you actually see anyone taking advantage of that?
No.
well, if you didn't go in and use it, you wouldn't.
Awesome. Right. It does seem weird. It does seem weird to us, but that's the din. I mean, you could say if you want to be firm about it, you could be choshish for the Shita Sarambam, who's a Das Yochid, and he holds that you're not allowed to urinate in tefillin. Mm-hmm. But that's don't bask like that.
It's not such a weird idea to think that you shouldn't.
No, but Lamaisa, that's really not the halacha. And it is very convenient. You know, sometimes in the middle of davening, you know, you just have to go out to the bathroom for 30 seconds. Oh, you have to take off your tefillin and your talus. Much more convenient if you could, if they had such rooms.
Well, if you're wearing tefillin all day, you're obviously,
no,
you know, it's more frequent than anything.
Correct.
Like the other thing. So, yeah,
And is it the same as a talus?
A talus is on a lower level. I tell you, you're allowed to wear in theory, you're allowed to wear a talus into the bathroom for any purposes. But
talus cotton, you certainly wear.
But the reason we don't wear a talus gadol lemaisa nowadays into the bathroom is because the talus gadol is now a garment designated for use during prayer.
Right.
So it could be considered disrespectful. That's why we also don't wear a kittel into the bathroom. A kittel,
A
kittel is nothing. There's no holiness in a kittel whatsoever.
It
but nevertheless,
holy.
But nevertheless, you don't wear a kittel in the bathroom because it's designated for use during prayer.
So get that slide to what we're doing. Come here.
Yeah.
The mitzvah tefillin is linked to Kriya Shema because that's in fact where it says.
Right.
Well, no. At one place, but the other place it tells you to do it out. Without
and the first two parshas doesn't mention Kriya Shema,
right?
Okay,
right. So, but the thing is that for Kriya Shema, that the declaration. This is all very much in the mind. This is all very spiritual and so on and so forth. But this idea, well, guess what? We need the physical being. We need to have the same
physical.
So maybe you would feel your tefillin or look at your tefillin or whatever, and you'd think of Kriya Shema.
That's what it says. The Chazal tell us that if you say Kriya Shema in the morning without tefillin, it's like you're meyid edus sheker. It's like you're testifying falsely about yourself because you're mentioning the mitzvah of tefillin and you're not doing it. So what's that?
What about women?
Because they're not chayev. The same as on Shabbos.
Well, yeah, there you go.
On Shabbos, you're not chayev and tefillin.
Okay.
So a man is also not made edus sheker. It's only if you're obligated in the mitzvah and you're not doing it. So that's why the mitzvah tefillin is closely linked to the morning services, and that's why in contemporary practice, most people wear tefillin only for shacharis. Okay, that's not universal. There are certain Kabbalistic, I think in yeshivas or shuls where they wear tefillin for mincha every day, which is not a bad idea. Why not? If you're just davening, so you could wear tefillin for mincha also.
Wasn't everybody wear a talus in mincha? Because it seems that you wouldn't need a hat then. You could put your talus over your head, right? Now that way,
If I were in charge of the world, I would institute talus and tefillin for mincha every day. But I'm not, so. Why not?
Professional interest here.
But that's not the
whole business of being dressed in a covetic manner.
Yeah,
right.
That means that you don't need to wear you don't need to have a whole suit and tie. They're actually covering up with a towel.
You're right.
I think that would be very handy.
I think so.
I would agree with you, but it's not the this lemaisa is not the minhag. Okay, v'ratza hamakom l'zakol sein achon l'kadosh v'tzivanu l'hamid shomrim giborim saviv la.
Isn't there actually an idea that if you learn Zohar or something like that, that you're supposed to be doing it with talus and tefillin?
It could be. I haven't heard about Zohar per se. There is
whatever you break up all.
There is a minach chasidus that's brought in the later postgame. That's it's not mentioned explicitly, but it seems to be reasonable. That it's proper to spend some time learning every day wearing talus and tefillin, or at least tefillin.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why many people will take out a sefer for a few minutes after shacharis and just try to learn for a couple of minutes to get this idea in of learning with tefillin on. It is a high quality. If you're already in the spiritual mode that you have the tefillin on, so then it helps concentration and helps internalizing the messages that you get while learning. I actually read somewhere many years ago, no idea if this is true, but it makes sense, that the tefillin actually stimulate acupuncture points.
Okay.
that are connected with greater feelings of spirituality. So it makes sense.
So Chazal knew all about the rivers in China, right, which are determine the acupuncture points. Wow, that's impressive.
So whatever, some points on your head, whatever it is that make you feel more spiritual. So okay, we can look into it more. But you people notice that when they're wearing tefillin, they feel more spiritual. We should always have a Torah in our mouths, literally, but in our minds and hearts, and day and night. And we're supposed to wear tzitzis on the four corners of our garment and a mezuzah on our doorways. And tefillin should go on our arms and our heads. It's a phrase that we find in Tefillas Ne'ila, that we should withhold our hands from dealing ill with other people. We shouldn't follow our eyes. Again, the tefillin The Torah describes the tefillin as being b'nei necha, between your eyes, meaning that the impact is on our eyes, that the tefillin should help us only look at things that are holy, even though not physically here, but it's still between our eyes. Yeah?
Yeah. Sometimes you'll see men, wearing towels and tefillin still, who will be hanging around after minyan or something like that, and just talking about business or the Yankees or something of that sort.
It's mutter.
It's mutter, because obviously we were all day, you had to talk about, you do your business then. But, you
know. Right, and of course we had to talk about the Yankees.
Yeah, okay.
So that's mutter. There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
As long as you're not treating them with disrespect, so then it's okay to do that.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Just not telling dirty jokes.
Or
Lashon Hara. That's for sure.
Lashon Hara,
dirty jokes are definitely not allowed with Tvillanon.
Not allowed anyway.
Yankees are fine. Okay.
Yankees are okay.
Okay, I won't be upset right here.
So, and on our arms, that it's the tefillin are by our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see that the tefillin, it doesn't mean you tie the tefillin on your hand, but you tie it up here, which is close to your heart, so
unless
it impacts
lefty.
Lefty, ooh, yes, but it's still close enough. Okay, it's not mamish next to your heart, but on the left side, but it's parallel,
Lungs are important, too.
Yeah. It's parallel. There is a shita, according to Kabbalah, that's nobody can figure out how on earth this could be, but even lefties should wear a tefillin on their right arm. I mean, I'm sorry, on the left arm. That's against the Gemara. It's against all the postgame. How could
that?
There's some Mikubalim who say this, some Kabbalists. How on earth you could say this is totally beyond anyone. I've never heard of anybody.
You put on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin without the bracha, then you can, get away with that, right?
But if you really wanted to, you could switch it. You could switch the tefillin. You could wear a lefty could wear the tefillin on the right arm during shacharis, and for a minute afterwards, just in case, the bichoshish for the. I mean, it's ridiculous. I don't recommend doing that, it's a really odd shita. But lemaisa, we paskin that it goes by. Well, no, we paskin. The Gemara says that it goes as it says in the Chumash, ukshartam laos al yodcha. That's in the parsha, the second parsha of tefillin, and it spells yodcha in an somewhat abnormal manner, which adds a hey at the end. Usually it would just be yod dalet chaf, and that would be it, but then adds a hey. The Chazal of a tradition that alludes to the phrase yad keha, the weaker arm. That means you put the tefillin on your weaker arm. And it also says, ukshartam lo slayodecha, what does it say? Uksavtam al mezuzos beisecha. So since it says, you shall tie and you shall write in the same pasuk, so that implies that you tie the tefillin with the same arm that you write with.
Okay.
So now we have an issue, though. What if your left arm is stronger, but you write with your right hand?
Yeah, that's my son.
So then you have a real problem. Which of those two drushas is the main drusha? So, the Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch, who was agreed to by the Vilna Gaon, actually, says that the main drusha is the Yad Keha drusha, and it always goes on your weaker arms, even regardless of which hand you write with. It doesn't go by writing, it goes by which arm is stronger.
Is that always so obvious?
I think probably with my son, it was the other way around. That goes after the writing hand.
Oh, so the Rama in the Shulchan Aruch, the normative Ashkenazi Psak, holds that the drasha of Uchsavtam is the main drasha. So therefore, you put the tefillin on the opposite arm from the one that you write with. So it's better not to have any shilos. Mm-hmm. If possible, one should be either a complete righty or a complete lefty. But those who HaKadosh Baruch Hu created otherwise will have to resolve the shilo at the time of the bar mitzvah. The shita of the Rama, even though you might say Ashkenazim paskin like the Rama and Sfaradim go like the Mechaber, but lemaisa many later Ashkenazi poskim, like I said, mentioned the Vilna Gaon as well, agree with the Mechaber. So that's why in a lot of cases, a poskim will recommend that you put them on both arms, actually.
Oh, wow.
You switch them for a few minutes after that.
Wouldn't the knot is on the opposite side then?
Yeah, but you could switch it. That's not makiv.
Yeah, right.
If you put in other words, it would just involve putting the knot on this side as opposed to this side.
Sure. Vavishkirk have their tefillin tanks, or what they call it.
Oh, they don't have a lefty?
I don't think it always does. I remember seeing whatever it is, somebody put turn it around. Yeah,
so that's not makiv. So you can use the same person.
What would you do?
You turn it around so that normally the knot is on the side of the hand, but you'd switch out the knot, it would be on the side of the shoulder.
Mm-hmm. put it upside down.
Yeah. Basically, well, what you would call upside down, yeah.
Spark fill in for Ashkenaz.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah.
Now, by the way, just a small digression. We talk about Usav Tamav is basically Shrecha. Doesn't that really sound like you yourself should go ahead and write, you know, the Mzizah yourself instead of hiring a sofer?
Well, there's always a shliach. You can always make a shliach. But here, there's no mitzvah to write at all. It's a fixing of the mezuzah. Even though it sounds like that, okay, if you're reading the pasuk, okay, but
I mean, like say we're Sefer Torah, we fill in the letters at least or something like that. So you know, we don't do that with mezuzahs.
No, but you don't have to do that if you want to be mekayim the mitzvah of ksiva Sefer Torah, for example. So it's fine to make a sofer a shliach.
Yeah,
I mean, some people because mitzvah bo yoser mebishlucho. So if you're being mekayim the mitzvah, so sometimes the sofer will leave a letter, a couple letters at the end, and the owner of the Sefer Torah will fill them in. Or if you're doing the shul is buying the Sefer Torah, and it's not a private individual. So it, just so everyone can participate in the mitzvah. But nobody, you get maybe a partial fulfillment of the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah, but the real mitzvah is can be fulfilled by a shliach.
It's like bris milah. Your father should do the bris on his son, but he can be...
But it never says, what does it say? It never says in the Chumash explicitly that the father is required to make the bris. Says what? Kishaki says real vidazahar vitamash yomash me gimol besar or so that his it doesn't identify the subject explicitly.
Yeah. Mm. Well, if you want to be really literal, you'd say you couldn't put it on a cloth. You go ahead on the doorpost itself. You on the paint. You go ahead and you write it there.
Okay. So, if you want to be really literal,
nobody.
Isn't the father over alive if he's not his son?
The father's not over now. The father is not Musa. The only person who's obligated on the bris milah is the individual. So the father is obviously the mitzvah min ha-mufchar, the main kiyam of the mitzvah is the father is supposed to do it. But the ultimate requirement of the mitzvah and the punishment, if you fail to perform it, falls on the person himself and not on the father.
But he doesn't become liable for this punishment until he's somewhat at the age of responsibility.
Bar mitzvah, whatever, yeah. Yeah, there's a machlokas Rambam and Ravid about this. But with the Rambam, what does the Rambam say? I think he says that you only really violate the mitzvah if you die uncircumcised. But the Ravid says, no, you violate the mitzvah every day. You get your chayiv karis every day that you after the age of 13 that you don't get circumcised. Okay. So there you are. But there also, it's not the you're not going to circumcise yourself. You know, you'd be yotze if you did that. But it's obviously, right. But it's very, very difficult to do that. Needless to say, okay. Ve'akol lahazkirin amalchim, but don't start. Okay. Umipnei chen amr zichronam levracha shakohanim balavim b'shas avod up turin mehen. That a lot of times you have haosig b'mitzvah poter min mitzvah. When you're dealing with another mitzvah, so you're exempt from one mitzvah. So the kohanim and levim during the worship in the Beis HaMikdash, they don't need the tefillin because they see the Beis HaMikdash all the time. So the Beis HaMikdash is enough to remind them of God's mitzvah. So v'yos miyisoda tefillin ma'ash zacharnu nitzavinu aleim leval nasiach mehen datenu. There is a rule that you have to constantly be aware of wearing the tefillin while you're doing it. If you can't lose track of wearing it. Again, if even if you're talking about the Yankees, you have to have in mind that you're wearing tefillin. Le'ata b'ni re'e gam re'e kama koach gufeinu godol al nafsheinu k'al kolele yalef amim uferetz gidreinu ha'el b'rachamav yeh be'ezreinu v'yishmereinu mimenu. So even though with that we have all these things that prevent us from sinning, or are supposed to remind us not to sin. Nevertheless, sometimes we sin anyway, and we have to be extremely careful. Don't rely on this totally. Yeah.
Now, if you do wear tefillin outside of davening, okay, you know you are.
Yeah.
Then aren't there certain things like things like the kohanim and so on? They're doing shechting. You know, isn't that something you will not want to wear tefillin for if you're getting blood all over the place and that there'd be a
right. So if you're doing an activity that's totally incompatible with tefillin, then you're putter for sure. Mm-hmm. But there are kohanim who are doing other things besides shechting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, okay.
And in the Beis HaMikdash.
Although it's, the highest level of Kedusha, if you're a choking.
Right, so eating also, the rule is that even if you're wearing tefillin all day, so when you're having a meal, you take off your tefillin during the meal.
Oh.
What you're supposed to do, the way the process that's described in Chazal, is when you go into the Suda, you take off your tefillin, then you have your Suda, and then you wash my machronim, and then you put the tefillin back on, and then you bench. Because you're supposed to bench with the tefillin on, because it may give you more kavana. But you're not supposed to have a sudas keva wearing tefillin. You are allowed to have snacks while you wear tefillin. That's, some people, I don't know, some people are weirded out by the idea that you eat at all during wearing tefillin, but that's not really true. It's completely mutter to have some small snacks while you're wearing tefillin. Midini amitzah, what are the halachas? Mashamar zichronim livracha, shasara dvarim yesh betfillin, bein shal rosh, bein shal yad, kulan halacha moshe misinai. So all these things are received tradition that go back really, really far from that were handed down to Moshe at Sinai, even though they're not recorded anywhere in the Chumash explicitly. If you make if you do any of these wrong, then the tefillin are pasul. There are two parts about the writing, and there are eight parts in the casings and the straps. These are the two things that are in the writing of the tefillin. Shekosvin osam bidyo, that they have to be written with ink. That in modern Hebrew, dyo means any ink. Yeah.
Art Scroll has a quote here. See Rambam and Mishnah Brura for the specific ingredients used to produce this ink. Now, is that
so? Ink in the times of Chazal was actually made of soot. Like you collected, you put a, you had a fire, and you put a little cup on top of the fire. You collected the soot that was coming out of the fire, and you took the soot, which is obviously black or blackish,
carbon black,
yes, and it was mixed with some sort of glue. Gums and glues that made the soot stick to the media that you're writing, not paper, but the animal skins that you're writing on, and that was the ink. So the shaila is, when Chazal say they have to be written with dyo, do you need this exact formula? Do you need carbon black? Which would pose a problem for us, because for the last couple hundred years we've been writing with iron sulfate ink, a metallic ink. So how could that be kosher? So the Maisa, we're relying on the Shita of the Rambam, that the Rambam says that when we say dyo, it doesn't mean that you need this exact formula. Even though the Rambam agrees, this is the main type of ink that you're really supposed to use to write Tefillin, Mezuzah, and Sefer Torah. But nevertheless, it's only pusul if you write with a different color. I mean, if you use a blue pen or blue ink to write a Sefer Torah, Tefillin, Mezuzah, that is no good. Any, according to the Rambam, any black ink is kosher, which is why sometimes if you have an emergency and so you have a Sefer Torah that needs repair, so sometimes someone will whip out a regular black pen and fix the Sefer Torah, because b'maisa, the ink that we're using in the Sefer Torah relies on the sheet of the Rambam that anything black is okay. So better to use a regular black pen than to let the Sefer Torah go unfixed. Yeah. But there are Rishonim that hold that you do need a carbon black ink in order to write Tefillin, Mezuzah, and Sefer Torah. And there are people nowadays who have updated the carbon. We hope that that's kosher as well, because it's better. That who have now taken, they hold it's basically the same. They just use, they use carbon to make the ink black, but then the gums and glues that they use to mix with it and add, and stick it to the media is stronger than that which was used in the times
it's
of Chazal.
It's a synthetic polymer, right?
I would love for you to talk to the inventors of these inks and weasel the formula out of them, because no, I could know exactly how.
It's a logical thing. It would be the properties of it. Okay, right. Yes, it'd be something which, you know, is a synthetic polymer and which in fact sets when it dries. So it, you know, it's sort of from, like it's a polyurethane or something like that. You know.
Could be. It could be. This is beyond my level of expertise, but I'll be happy to lend you.
I'll smell some, but I'll tell you at least what the solvent is. You know. So.
Okay, I'll be happy to bring some in. So there's this. There's a Chabad physicist who lives in Scranton, Pennsylvania. That he invented something that he calls Dyo Lanetzach, meaning eternal dyo. It's a little bit of a presumptuous name, but whatever. Mm-hmm. He said that the Lubavitcher Rebbe told him that he should use his scientific knowledge for holy purposes. Okay, so he invented this. He invented this ink, which is has based on carbon, and instead of the old inks, which were not as strong, so this ink is flexible. Even if you bend it and squish it, it doesn't break. It's waterproof. So it. There are a lot of. It's harder to write with, but if it is once you have the finished product, so there are many advantages to this this ink.
Is that what our Sefer Torah is written in?
Our Sefer Torah is written in the same.
That's how you know
ink,
it's hard to write.
So that's why I said at the Siyum, I sort of half-jokingly said, you know, if you want someone, you could wet your finger and, you know, go like this on the Sefer Torah, and nothing's going to happen. So one of the people in the audience was going like this. Like, but it's really true. I have, you know, sometimes if I'm writing a mezuzah or something with this ink and somehow it gets passeled, so I can't use it anymore. So I have done experiments. Or you just stop. You
have scraps.
You have scraps, and you write with the ink. You take your finger with water. You take it to the kitchen sink, you soak it in water, nothing happens. It's mamish amazing. Which may be a chisaron, because we know that by the sota, that that the ink,
nice
that the sota, the thing that was written for the sota, the parsha of the sota, was supposed to be erased into water. So that's why some people hold that it's a mitzvah min hamufchar, if the dio can be erased with water, but nevertheless, since seemingly everyone would agree that this is kosher, most Rishonim.
That seems like an incredibly compelling argument, I have to say.
Yes, except that we don't
okay.
do it anymore.
The sota is very fundamental, very well established,
we don't do it anymore.
I mean, as a ritual.
No.
So,
who says, though, that the exact formula for the sota ink is going to be the same? But the important thing seems to be that it has to be black.
That's the Rambam
Shita. Preferably, in fact, right. Yeah. And it has to be black, and it can't be, like, reddish, which happens, in fact, if you have, like, say, you know, the iron sulfate starts to oxidize.
Oh, that's a major problem with the iron sulfate, yes.
So the question is whether you're going with some kind of, like, vegetable gums or whether a synthetic polymer, that's just basically, like, that's not the actual pigment. Ichor is the pigment, you think.
I would be inclined to agree with you, but there are possibly Rishonim that insist on more of a strict adherence to the exact formula that was used in the times of Chazal. But that point that you brought up about the ink is very important. That if you look at old Sifrei Torah, they're turning brownish, and that's because of the oxidization of the iron sulfate ink. So that's why I prefer not to use it if at all possible. That I recommend that people, if they're think about it as far enough in advance. You know, some people say, "Oh, I'm moving into my new mansion in Teaneck tomorrow. I need 50 mezuzahs." Well, why didn't you order it? Half a year ago, I could have gotten it for you with a special ink and everything. And why now I have to get something that's already written and that's hard to find? Okay, but I do recommend that. If people are ordering new stamps, you get the good ink. Again, it's self defeating for me because it means that the stamp requires less maintenance.
Right.
But still, for the customer, it's certainly preferable. There are other new inks also but I haven't researched them so efficiently. I did try writing with them, and they actually write much better than the Odil and Netzach. But I'm not sure they're as permanent. Okay, I have to look into them more. Yeah.
Ink, let's say you make a mistake. How do you correct that?
With a razor blade, you can scrape it off.
Oh, you can scrape it.
Yeah. Right. It also dissolves in alcohol, which might help you figure out.
So, if you're having the schnapps, just be kept away from it. Okay, it's not polyurethane then. So, for sure.
I have a recollection that somebody who used a product.
Anyway, Shiyu Nichtavos al Haklaf. That tefillin have to be written on klaf. What is klaf? That the whole skin of the animal is called gvil. And then you have two parts. If you split the grain layer of the epidermis from the rest of the dermis, so then you call, one is called klaf, one is called duchsustus. So the Gemara says that gvil is for Sefer Torah, klaf is for tefillin, and duchsustus is for mezuzah. So the question is, which layer is klaf, which layer is duchsustus? There's a whole machlokas harishonim about this, so it's a whole big shaila. Lamaisa, though, the part that what we used to write tefillin and mezuzah in Sefer Torah most of the time nowadays is just parchment, which was substituted for all the things that were used in the times of the Gemara because they didn't have the knowledge and the Mesorah of how to do it in medieval Europe. But in Middle Eastern countries, they certainly did continue to use gvil for Sefer Torah, at least for many hundreds of years until the present day, since some are still doing it nowadays.
It's an R Sefer Torah.
Oh, like R Sefer Torah. So if you look, I wrote a whole article about this. So why shouldn't we use gvil? It's what it says in the Gemara. There's no chisaron, so you should use gvil. But again, the halachic tradition backing the use of regular parchment is very well established. And also, some say that even if the parchment that we use comes from the wrong side of the animal, because we assume classically that parchment has a din of klaf. So otherwise we'd be stuck with tefillin, because even though, so Sefer Torah is lechatchila on gvil, but it's still kosher on klaf, and many say it's kosher on duchsustus as well, as all three of the skins. And mezuzah also, most the Rishonim hold, is kosher on all three skins, types of skin. But tefillin are only kosher on klaf. So if we don't have klaf, so then we're really stuck. So we assume that the parchment has a din of klaf, even if it's not really klaf, because it's prepared in a way, it's more of a practical, pragmatic type of analysis, meaning that the point was not necessarily you need a particular type of part of the skin to write the tefillin, but rather the tefillin should just be prepared in a manner that's appropriate for the writing of tefillin. So according to many Rishonim, that applies to our contemporary parchment as well, that even if it's not really klaf, it has a din of klaf.
Well, it's thinner, obviously, than Gvil, right? So is that
thinner than Gvil, yeah.
Yeah, so that's helpful for making tefillin,
It's helpful, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. But if it's not kosher, so it doesn't matter that it's helpful. Okay. So some Rishonim hold that it's not good. Like the Rambam and some Geonim hold, maybe the Ramban, maybe the Rashba, hold that it's not good. But the Maisa of the tradition very strongly is that that it is good as well. But there may be room to use the other type of cloth. Again, look at the article. I don't want to go into length right now. Ve'iluhein Shimona Shebechipuyan. What are the eight halachos that are required for the boxes? Shilmirubos. They have to be square. V'chein betfirasan beribua. The stitching has to be square. V'alachsonan beribua. So the diagonals have to be square. What does it mean the diagonals have to be square? Meaning if you just said, in Hebrew, there's not a stark division between squares and rectangles. They might both be called ribua. But when it says that the diagonals have to be square also, meaning the what the hypotenuses of the right triangles, you have to give me extra points for using math terminology. So the those also have to be square, meaning that it has to be what we call in English a square as opposed to a rectangle. But the height does not have to be square. Mm-hmm. The tefillin can be as tall as you want as long as the length and width are the equivalent. Ajil and arba zavios shavos. They have to be four of the same types of corners. B'shia ba'or shel rosh tzuras shin mi'aminu mi'smol. That the there should be something that looks like a shin on both sides of the tefillin shel rosh. That one shin has three heads, like a normal shin, and one shin has four heads. We know the number seven is significant in Judaism, so he wants a total of seven shin heads.
What's the idea behind a four-headed shin? That's not a letter. You can't. If you have a Sefer Torah and you put an extra, put a four-headed shin, that's puzzle, right?
Probably, yeah. That's halacha. That's halacha Moshe Mitzinai. The idea is not to have an actual shin on both sides, but rather one shin. It's an unusual shin. It's a funky shin. It makes it feel interesting. Okay. That's a shiloh. So maybe the question is, does the shin of the tefillin have to have all the dinim of a shin? Mm-hmm. That it seems to be in many Rishonim that, especially in the primitive technology for making batim, so what they would just do is when the skin for making the boxes was still wet, they would take like tweezers or something and they would just pinch the skin into the form of a shin. So you can't make mamash a shin like that. It would be just three lines. Like three basic lines. So that also, it's a the pash this is, again, maybe some sheet well, it would be okay, but that would not be kosher in a Sefer Torah. It just has to look sort of like a shin. Yeah.
So now with the hydraulic presses they use for mm-hmm. the hemagazes, is it actually like part of the mold or something like that?
It's not part of the mold, the original mold. They use a separate...
It's not in size. It's actually
no, they
relief.
Use...
Isn't
what?
It's relief, for the...
So what they do, actually, is there are some shitas that hold that making the shin is a problem of what we call chak tochos, that when you have something in halacha that requires writing, the rule is you have to actually do something to on the form of the letter rather than on mm-hmm. the background of the letter. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if you have like a get, for example, so a get has to be written, the chasal sefer krisus. So the halacha is you don't have to write a get on paper or parchment or anything. You could even use a metal plate to write a get. Mm-hmm. But what's considered writing? Meaning if you take a chisel and you bang out the letters, that's okay. But if you take the chisel and you bang out the background of the letters so that the letters will be formed automatically from the background being punched out, that is called chak tochos, and that is puzzle.
Like a taglio, which for wedding announcements, they had raised letters.
Right. So the same would apply if you're writing tefillin and mezuzis. That if you, for example, have a blob of ink and you chisel it out with a razor blade until it looks like a yud or something, so that would be puzzle, because the letters have to be actually written as opposed to carving away the background.
No.
So you're supposed to trust this over.
No, but how can you... I mean, if you're checking it, how can
you don't know. Once it's been written, you have no idea, obviously. That's why you have to buy from a reliable sofa. You can't just take something and give it to someone to check, and if it looks good, that means it's kosher. That's not necessarily true.
Matter how good he is, he won't be able to tell.
Correct. But, well, checking it, you can absolutely cannot tell. That's why you have to purchase
from
a reliable sofa.
From the get-go, you have to get it from a reliable
sofa. That's right. So that some people are concerned that this rule of chak tochos applies to the shin shel tefillin also, which many shittas hold not like that. But so they don't want it to just to be in a press that will press the skin of the tefillin housing, and then the shin will appear automatically. So what they do is they wet the sides of the batim, and they use a special tool to work the skin to make it protrude the shin. But then it doesn't look so nice. So then once that's done with a hand work, so then they use a nice little mold, like you say, and they put it back in the press, and then that just beautifies it, but it doesn't actually make the shin. It's a very complicated process because of the thick skin that we use for tefillin nowadays. You can't do it the classical way just by pinching out the skin with a little tweezers. So it is complicated, but that's how you do it now.
So wait, so the leather we use now, though, I mean, it's possible to wet it and mold it after it's,
Yeah, because it's not tanned. It's rawhide. It's just in lime. So the parchment is also in lime, but the parchment does need eblud, according to everyone, so that's all shy of what that counts. So we hold that the batim really do need eblud, but that the lime counts for the eblud. But lemaisa, in English terminology, in scientific terminology, it's not tanned. So therefore, it's still malleable after.
Okay, so you got to keep tefillin away from dogs, so it's a rawhide toy, right?
Exactly. That has happened historically.
Oh my God.
Dogs have played with tefillin. Yes, sure it's been. Sure it's happened. But it also is advantageous that sometimes people will hit their tefillin and cause damage, so it's very easy to repair. You basically just have to wet the area, and then it expands, and then you just sand it back down into the right... Okay. So people have come to me many times, they banged in the corner of their tefillin. So they say, well, I'm worried it's not square anymore. So I say, no, it still looks square. No. Okay, you want me to fix it? He says, yeah, I'd like it to be more square. Please fix it. So I say, you can really do it yourself. It's very easy. You take a Q-tip, you wet the Q-tip, you stick it on the corner of the tefillin, you let the skin pop up, and then you sand it back down. You let it dry, and then you sand it back down. Very, very easy. So people, not one person has taken me up on it to do it themselves. No, you just do it. Okay, whatever. So they want me to do it. Okay, so that's the, we'll stop there today. And then next week, we will have to continue with Gimel.